Hello, hailing frequencies are open. Welcome to Geek History Lesson Extra. I am Jason Black Lantern Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson, but you already knew that because you are beautiful, sexy people who support us here on Patreon.
Yeah.
And oh boy, are we kicking off a long week of podcasts.
Yeah, and this is the extra condign to the Blackest Night week that's happening on the Geek History Lesson feed, where, you know, we made 10 hours of content for you lovely patrons, and we decided to share 5 hours of that content.
Well, we technically made 13 hours of content for them, if you count the mailbags.
Oh, that's fair.
And the interview.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah, we condensed it down to five hours.
Yes, our lovely editor, Savage Sword of Adam Selecta. If you've watched any of the Blackest Night, there are some people that could be listening to this that may not be at the Blackest Night Explained level.
That's true.
So if you don't know, like at the $8 level, we have Blackest Night Explained, literally 10 hours of content, 13 hours of content because we did the Patrick Gleason interview, all kinds of stuff. Go check it out if you want to. If you don't, that's totally fine. But we're letting the public hear about 5 hours of it.
Yeah. It's about a third, little more than a third of it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of these ways that Patreon actually suggested to us of a great way to bring people into your Patreon and get more support for the podcast and do stuff like that. Because, of course, the more the Patreon grows, the more we can do for you guys.
Yeah. And one of my favorite things, and I said this in one of the intros, is that when people come over to Patreon, if they participate, if they comment and they engage, because some people just come and lurk, and that is totally cool.
Hey, that's how they just want to listen to the podcast.
Exactly. I'm a lurker. I'm not a huge commenter.
I am too.
But if you do participate, we get to know you and we get to know your taste. Like some of our hardcore, like people who were here from the beginning.
You mean like Tom Trainer?
Yes. And Nate Olson Diamond Wong and Tim Robertson.
Jacob Westfall.
And Jake Hefner. Like I know stuff about them personally. I know about their taste and we're friends because they hang out and they support us. And that is one of the coolest things. And most of those people don't live in Southern California. So it's a great way for us to get to know you. And what's cool about that is it lets us tailor content.
Exactly.
Like we let you choose and y'all pick Blackest Nights. That's why we're doing Blackest Night Club. That's why we did Blackest Night Club this
year. Well, let's talk about a little bit about Blackest Night Club and how we made that happen and stuff and whatever. Let's walk down memory lane with that, Ashley.
Yeah, so you all voted for Blackest Night Club, and I said, I don't want to do Blackest Night. And Jason said, well, we're doing Blackest Night, so we did Blackest Night.
Well, I will throw you under the bus a little bit.
No, I was going to tell the real version of that story.
I was like, all four choices we put on that poll
were things
that you said yes to.
Yes.
Because I was like, we cannot put anything on that poll
that we're not willing to
read. That we wouldn't be willing to read the whole event.
Exactly. Yeah. I am just not hot on zombies. And so, of course, that's the one that everybody picked, which is fine. And as I said in a lot of the video episodes, I don't know how much of it transferred over to the audio. I went into this hoping that I would understand why this event is special and why people loved it, because when I was working in a comic book store regularly, Blackest Night was always something that people came in looking for. We always had it in stock. It's never gone out of print.
It's never left print.
The 10-year anniversary Omni just came out, and that's the one that we recommended people pick up.
That's the one I bought.
That's the one that we were using for our reading. And
I probably would have bought that no matter what.
Yeah, but it was a great excuse,
right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Right? And then it becomes a business expense. And then that way, that was what I wanted to get out of this. And so I think with that framing, I saw a lot of it. But the most interesting thing to me going into this right away, because I knew we were doing the Flash crossovers, was I was like, the Flash tie-in issues is, how much of the Flash TV show is this going to herald? And let me tell you, it's a lot.
I guess.
I think you can definitely see a lot of who the Barry Allen on television is from this miniseries.
Okay.
I do. All right. But so Jason bought the Omni. The Omni showed up. We started to read it. And we shot these very quickly compared to Crisis Club. When we did Crisis Club last year, we shot Crisis Club pretty much month to month.
Almost.
Yeah, did. Or we would do like maybe two at a time.
We'd do two or three at a time.
And a lot of that was also because we did more news segment type stuff, and we did more tie-ins because we were building towards the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover. We weren't doing that with Blackest Night. We know Blackest Night will make it to the screen at some point. And so as a result, we were able to record these very quickly. And when you watch the videos, our office has changed significantly since then. Mm-hmm. And so every time we were uploading and releasing those episodes, that was something very funny to me. Jason, do you want to talk a little bit more about recording the episodes?
I will say, I just want to point out to everybody that listens on the Patreon that recording those episodes are a lot harder than you think.
Yeah,
it's the same. It's the same as doing a geek history lesson.
Yeah, because especially for you,
it's not just sitting down and talking about the book.
Yeah.
Because I hate those type of videos, and I don't think those videos are good to watch. So I don't ever want to make those videos. So like, I have to like read the issue, and then I have to figure out, are there any Easter eggs in the issue? Or yeah. I have to figure out, are there any things over here? Or are there interesting things? And at a certain point, it piles up, and it like just crushes down in your brain. You're like, I don't know. How dark then? Like it just combines. Like you're just like, my mind is mush because I have so much comic book information in here. And I think that's what, like if you watch those videos you listen to the episodes, you can hear me. Sometimes my brain just breaks.
Yeah. And Jason
and Adam like edit most of it out. But like sometimes I get overwhelmed to where I'm like, I don't know what we're talking about now.
Yeah. And Jason, as the person who's leading them and as the person who's read this before, like when we did Crisis, I had read Crisis before. I had not read Blackest Night Club before. So you are sort of straddled with the burden of doing all the heavy lifting and pointing out things. Like there were things that I criticized or I pointed out or I didn't understand in the early issues or in the miniseries, and you were like, oh, well, that's going to come into play later on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very interesting. But I felt a little, when we were recording them, sometimes I would feel bad. Because I knew you were doing, like, I knew you were had to do more work on them than I did. Whereas, like, Crisis on Infinite Earth, I felt like I brought a little bit more to that. So for me, that was a very different experience. And then it sort of carried over into when we were releasing the episodes on Patreon, because I was like, what happens in this episode? We recorded this episode in March, and it's September or October now when we're releasing it. And so I would have to, like, scrub through and check and be like, what did we even talk about? What were the jokes of this episode?
I watched every one of them because Adam would send them to us about a month ahead of time sometimes.
Yeah, Adam also did really cool effects.
That's the thing we got to talk about. Adam Selecta like went above and beyond with Blackest Night Club. I don't want to get too much in the weeds because I feel like, I don't know if this is even interesting to the patrons. But I also want to bring up that we have, like, as of currently, we have no idea what we're doing next year.
Yeah.
We haven't had time to figure that out yet or anything like that. We have some ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say here that I do not think it's going to be a video docuseries.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are a bit more production heavy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it takes a lot of time to film, whereas, like, I think whatever we do next is going to be a podcast exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a bit of time.
And it will, some of the stuff that we've been talking about, like, are definitely going to be focused series. We're not sure yet if it's comics or television that we're going to focus on, but it's definitely still going to be like a deep dive or a re-exploration style, because that's been really interesting. That's been a really interesting part of doing these club series is. But speaking of Adam, one of my favorite things in doing Blackest Night Club is when Adam would make like funny pictures and send them to us. Like he sent us a Robin party and he sent us he photoshopped all of our faces into like when the color core comes together for the first time. And he put intern Brago on the orange line. Like I thought stuff like that for me was very, very fun.
Which is stuff we didn't ask him to do.
No. He just did it because he's a sweet angel.
He did it because he loves to play in Adobe After Effects. That's why he does it. There's a lot of different stuff that he would add that we had no intent. We were like, oh my God, where did that come from?
And it's
way better than I could ever do because Adam, I mean, I was a professional editor for about 4 years, but mm-hmm. I never did anything with After Effects or anything.
No, Adam's like
that.
Like a real grown up editor.
he loves After Effects and does stuff like that. Like that's what he wants to
do.
Which is why he's passionate about it. He knows everything. I want to talk about Blackest Night Post for you.
Sure.
You said that you were unsure about the event and zombies and stuff like that. And I know some of this might be repeating what you've already said final video, but like we have a couple months. You've had a couple months to think about Blackest Night now.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, do you think it is an important event in DC? Because I will say like when we finished it,
mm-hmm.
I want to say that like, and again, this is taking Crisis on Infinite Earths off the table.
Yeah.
But besides Crisis on Infinite Earths, I almost think it might be the best DC universe-wide event. Simply because, like, I think most of the tie-ins do matter.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're actually telling an interesting story. And that's a big problem with events. And I also think that another big problem with comic book events is that most comic book events always have dud issues. And what I mean by that is, like, the first issue is really great. Second issue, nothing happens. The third issue is really great. Fourth issue,
even
nothing
happens. Even Crisis has that with, I believe it's issue 9, which is the villains crossover. And you're like, why?
And something big happens in every issue of the main, of all 8 issues of the main series. And I think that's a pretty good, I think that was another strength, but like, and it also like actually changed the DC universe. And a lot of events don't do that. A lot of events are like, it's never going to be the same.
Joker War.
And then nothing happens.
Okay, well, you said 2 different phrases. You said, is it one of the best DC events? And then you said, is it the most one of the most important?
Let me ask you,
and to me, those are different answers.
Let's ask a question. Do you understand why people still talk about this event 10 years later?
I understand why people like Blackest Night Club. Mm-hmm. And I understand if you have been reading this series and it led to this, I understand why this hit. Now, we've seen this copied to death.
Of course.
With Marvel Zombies, with every goddamn thing Deadpool's ever done.
Marvel Fear itself is literally hammers fall from the sky and they turn different colors. It is literally
Blackest
Night.
Fear itself better.
Oh my God. Oh, Ashley.
Yeah.
Them's fighting words.
Yeah.
Fear itself is a blatant Blackest Night ripoff.
It is. It absolutely is. But Thanos is also a blatant Darkseid ripoff.
No,
you know, like,
I don't like Thanos better than Darkseid.
No. But I'm just saying that the companies steal from each other. Sure. It's not a secret. We know that. Doom Patrol and X-Men. Who did it better? Mm-hmm. X-Men.
I'll never forgive Fear itself for introducing us to Null, which I thought was one of the dumbest things I've ever read.
Yeah, I mean, I think Blackest Night Club is better in execution, but I like the device of Fear itself better. I like the idea of the hammers. I think it's very interesting because they come with more of a burden, right, of like the worthiness than just like the ring choosing you. I would have said about 5 years ago.
5 years
that
ago.
Blackest Night Club was important. But to the current DC continuity, I don't think it's as important. And I actually think it has led to...
taking us back to 5 years ago, sorry.
A muddling of the Green Lantern universe. And it's led to a lot of bad titles for cool characters or cool ideas.
I mean, you're talking about, like, I mean, just like Larfleeze and Red Lanterns getting their own solo titles.
And like, look, I actually, okay, so one, I don't think Larfleeze can carry a title.
No, I agree.
I don't fault anyone who worked.
I believe we talked about that in
the
podcast.
I'm sure we did. I don't fault anyone who worked on that book, like, absolutely good for you. I would have taken it as well. I do think Red Lanterns could carry a book. I do think Indigo Lanterns could carry a book. And then also, I think the impact of it gets lost when you consider Brightest Day, which is terrible.
Yep.
I'm sorry if you like it. Objectively, it is not good. But also, I think it loses its impact when Geoff Johns copies himself and does the same thing in Shazam Wars or whatever that's called.
Yeah, the 7 different kingdoms.
Yeah. So like, I think in the interim, I think it's been watered down. Ultimately, when it comes to events and crossovers, and we've done several like main Lesson Geek History lessons about this.
Yeah.
I think in the DC continuity, I think there's pretty much 2 important events.
What are the 2?
Crisis on Infinite Earths and the death of Superman.
I was waiting for you to say death of Superman.
I think that's exemplified when we talked about our crossovers, that like all of my favorite crossovers and events are family specific.
Yeah.
Because I think it is really hard to make an impactful across the line.
What are your favorite DC crossovers event? Just throw out a couple. I don't know if I know them.
No Man's Land is my favorite.
It's awesome.
Like far and away. Mm-hmm. And then I think when we did that, we tabled Crisis because
we did.
We said Crisis was the best. Like,
yeah, I mean, Crisis is objectively number 1, no matter what.
Like, I don't think I put this on my list, but like, I love Robin War.
Yeah, it's okay. It's all right.
I don't know. I can't think of any because I don't have my notes in front of me. Listen to that episode.
Nightfall's
good, but again, that's closed continuity.
Contagion's
okay. It's not great.
Bruce Wayne Murderer.
I
do
like Bruce Wayne Murderer. Yeah, but like, I don't love a crossover. Identity Crisis and Final Crisis,
your
I think,
favorite
are really
Milk
good.
Wars?
I fully have not read any of that.
You're not missing anything.
If you love Milk Wars, A+ for you. But I think objectively, when you like look at what it achieved for the time, I do think it's important, but I think it with a decade plus on it, I think it's been watered down somewhat.
Okay.
I want to ask you this because this is
ask away.
Great. Because we pitched like 80 million versions of like how this could be adapted or how this could be adapted.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Blackest Night, you
mean. Yeah, Blackest Night specifically. Mm-hmm. Or like
not we, this podcast.
It could look, if someone wants to buy Geek History Lesson and turn it into a talk show, just contact our reps. We'll sell for cheap.
Sorry, selling out, folks.
It's not selling out. It's being successful.
That's true.
People should absolutely remove the phrase sellout
that is true.
From their vernacular. That's some jealous bullshit.
It's
we should all be so lucky to like be on the Pepsi commercials.
It's called We Want to Buy a House.
Exactly. Do you think, because Blackest Night is going to be adapted.
Oh, 100%.
It's just a matter of when and how.
100%, Ashley.
Do you still maintain that you think it is best for like a mini or like a season of a show? Like, because you kept pitching like an HBO style or probably now a boys style adaptation.
I'm calling it.
Versus a movie.
I am calling it right now.
Okay.
And it all depends on how many seasons they get.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know they're going to get at least two.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Lantern HBO Max series,
mm-hmm.
if they can get past three seasons,
yep.
will do
yep.
Blackest Night. Or they'll do Blackest Night as their season two.
I just want to say...
They will do it.
We know somebody who's on that show.
We know one of the writers of that show.
Yes, we do.
And I'm so happy for him.
And he also wrote on a really great superhero crossover.
I mean, we don't...
And so
I will say, we don't have to say his name, but I will say it has been publicly revealed who this person is.
Okay, I couldn't remember if I had it.
It is.
Well, then I will say it.
Yes.
Lamont McGee
yes, yep.
is a friend of ours. Lamont wrote on Blacklight. He's amazing. If you're not following him, he's a great social media follow.
He wrote on Crisis on Infinite Earths.
He wrote all the Black Lightning stuff and then consulted on the other scenes in Crisis on Infinite Earths. And like I just want Lamont to handle it because I know he'll do a great job.
Well, I was like, he tweeted that he was on that show.
I couldn't remember if he just told us. Or not. Yeah.
There's some name drops for you.
Yeah, there you go.
That's our name drops.
There you go.
Do you like that sound effect?
I do. It reminds me of
listeners are getting
a little fairy.
Listeners are getting a sneak peek into the Doctor Strange holiday special with that sound effect.
Yeah, Jason, before we recorded this, uploaded a bunch of sound effects and told me to go into the next room so I couldn't hear them. So there's a behind the scene on the podcast as well.
Yep.
Did rereading this, did going through this event now that you've worked for DC Comics and you are a professional writer for both television and comic books and prose, Triple Threat, did like the experience that you have on it now change any of your views from when you were reading it week to week when it was being released?
Overall, I would say it's still really good.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it holds up. I really do. That was the thing that surprised me the most. I think overall, I do think 10 years later, it really holds up. I don't feel it has aged. It hasn't aged.
Perfectly.
Well, no. I was expecting it to age worse.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I kind of feel like it feels like it was written within the last 3 years.
It does. It feels very contemporary, for sure.
There are some, basically the biggest changes that I can see more of how the sausage is made.
Uh-huh.
Like, I can see like, oh, this is why he had Sinestro do this, or this is why they had this happen so they could get another issue out of it.
That Sinestro standalone, like, basically issue is really good.
Yeah, though. It's really good. So I could see more of that, and there were some decisions that I was like, you should have cut that, or you should have extended that. But, like, you always have those ideas post the event.
2020, of course.
Hindsight is always 2020. No, I was just overall like, this is still pretty good. Like, it actually made me really happy because I will be honest with you listeners, and because you are patrons, and I will tell you this. When I bought that omnibus, I made the decision that if I reread this event and I didn't like it, I was going to sell that omnibus.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that omnibus sits on our shelves.
It does. We still have it.
Yep. I will not get rid of that.
What on this reread, what was your favorite thing about Blackest Night? I can answer first if you want.
Do you mean like a story moment?
Anything. Like, I'll tell you mine.
I don't have an answer, so go ahead.
I really love Mara in this event.
Oh, that's
Mara's a fucking badass. And this, for the first time, like, Mara was always a character that I was like, yeah, Mara's fine. I love Danielle Page and Stephen Burns. DC Kids book, which is why we had her on the Mara episode. But, like, this is where I was like, oh, Mara feels, like, accessible and real and modern and not just, like, a trophy wife in this in this event. And yeah. I definitely think, having since read a couple of the Mara standalones, I think Jeff Johns, I want to say intentionally, because he is a great writer, and, yes, and Blackest Night is kind of the peak of his power.
It is the peak of his storyline. Yes.
I want to say that he intentionally did that for this character that he loved and didn't have a place in the modern DC universe.
Oh yeah. You can definitely tell that Mara,
you can basically see who his favorite characters are in this.
Oh, 100%. Well, because they're
and
all,
I'm not saying I would not do the exact same
thing. They're all the characters that get the other rings.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to me, this event basically just reminded me of my love for Sinestro. And mm-hmm. I know that's weird because Sinestro is basically Hitler, but
Sinestro is also a fabulous character.
When you write Jeff Johns, to me he's one of the few modern writers that writes Sinestro interesting, because his final issue on Green Lantern, I've talked about the story so many times, is that final beat between him and Sinestro, or Hal Jordan Sinestro, and Hal goes to Sinestro, "Were we ever friends?"
Yeah.
And Sinestro goes, "That's the tragedy, Hal. We were best friends."
And that is the tragedy.
And when you write Sinestro like that, that he's not actually evil Hitler.
Yeah.
He like truly believes that everything he's doing is the right thing. Mm-hmm. And he's willing to destroy his daughter, his family, his best friends, his job to do what he thinks is right.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes such an interesting character, and he becomes more interesting than just "I'm Space Hitler." Ah, or no, as I did it in the previous episode, "I'm Space Hitler."
Yeah, there you go. Give him your Prince Sinestro. Philip.
He becomes more interesting.
Yeah,
and that was something that really stuck out to me on this reread.
Cool. I also loved all the Saronic Natu stuff, and it's so
of course.
It's funny because Pat is doing these really interesting, like, whiteout designs.
Patrick Gleason, you should say.
Yes. Well, I call him Patrick Gleason. Yes. Who we interviewed? Who Jason interviewed? Mm-hmm. I didn't.
You were at work.
I was working. But he is doing these really interesting, like, whiteout covers, and he has been putting her in the covers, yep. And I'm like, yay, because I love her, yep. And he draws her so well.
I don't know. I think it's pretty good extra. Anything else? Any other final questions? I don't know.
Final questions?
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you think Intern Brego thought of the event?
Is he here?
I don't think so. He was trying to get up on the window for a long time, and then I think he gave up.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know what he thought.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Well, we're going to end this the same way we always do. You know, listeners. By the way, I love that the patrons love Price is Right coming into this, man.
Well, someone has to. It's not me.
If you love this patron, the Price is Right in this theme song or in our extra, please let us know down in the comments. I love to hear that. I don't think it's going anywhere. You know, I used to be very careful about putting copyrighted things in there, and now, like, I just don't care. And a lot of it, too, like, YouTube's going to, or Patreon, the copyright flags will just come up no matter what, even if we are using non-copyrighted things now.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm just like, you know what? You've made it so hard that I just don't care anymore.
It's just because it's just a bot who's looking for keywords. Yeah, they're exactly. Not actually watching your video.
Yeah. There was a video, fun fact, listeners, that we uploaded early.
Yeah.
And it already is flagged before it's uploaded, before it went public.
Here's I'll tell you this. So when, we upload these Geek History Lesson, our main episodes, to YouTube about 5-6 weeks after mm-hmm. you get them in the feed, because for some reason that's how people want to listen to their podcast. And every time we upload a Miyazaki movie retrospective, we get a ding on it.
Well, I'll put you
every single time.
I'll put you a time thing. We did the Bill and Ted episode.
Yeah.
And I played God Rock
yeah,
and Roll.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kept it to 13 seconds, which is the rule.
Which is the law, yes.
Which is the law. You can play 10 seconds yeah. and get away with it. And YouTube's already flagged it.
Yeah.
I've already gotten that email.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. So
I don't even think that episode's released yet.
It's not. That's why I'm bringing
yeah.
it up. That's why not. YouTube's already flagged it. Like, their bots are like, will now flag unlisted videos.
Yeah.
That's a little bit behind the content creation, everybody.
This is why everyone's leaving YouTube.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for your support. We got a very exciting next year coming up. So.
Got a very exciting holiday special coming up.
We do.
They're going to hear this before the holiday special.
They will.
Yeah.
I know. We haven't recorded it yet.
Nope.
So it's still ahead of us for us. We haven't recorded it yet.
It's going to be very good, though. I'm calling it right now.
We've never gone almost the entire Price is Right theme song, and we're getting close.
I'm waiting to get to that weird bridge. There it goes.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.